This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Freely.
And it's
live, I think.
Live. Yeah. Hence the name, Free Talk Live.
We have a telephone number if you'd like to join us. It's 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio, it's myself, the captain.
Zephin.
And Bigless Mountaineer.
Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash. Digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency made for spending. Dash transactions are irreversible, so Dash is great for merchants. Plus, its network is protected from 51% attacks by its chain locks technology. Thanks to the Dash DAO, that's a decentralized autonomous organization, for sending us 32 Dash per month for the sponsorship. It's easy to get and easy to use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org.
Can I say something?
I don't know. Can you?
Yeah. I love Dash.
Yeah.
I love Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I love every cryptocurrency, more or less.
Yeah.
The thing that I don't love is when we all attack each other and are, like, spending all of our time being like, you're the worst because you're not, like, exactly what I want. Like, I think that we as pioneers of this technology should be focusing on picking our favorites and just getting as many people onboarded as possible. And I love that Dash does such a great job at that. I prefer Lightning. I prefer Bitcoin personally. But I love Dash because it really does prioritize that, like, getting people onboarded and using the thing more than most projects do.
Because I've been able to use cryptocurrency after relocating to New Hampshire, where there are merchants who accept it and people who deal in it, and, like, you know, communities of people who are like, oh, hey, yeah, we're going to be over here. We're having a market day. And yeah, sure, I'll take Bitcoin for my goods or services.
Yeah.
Like, I've been able to use it. And so one of the great things about that is that, like, I'm not locked into any one specific currency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? If I want to buy something and not have the transaction or have the transaction be as private as possible, you know, the person I'm trying to transact with or business takes Monero, right? Far out, selling right on. We use Monero because they're the privacy coin, right? Or at least the biggest one. If I don't care, right, then I'll use something else, right? I'll try to use something fast, right? Bitcoin, really, like, it hasn't been very effective at sort of point-of-sale instant payments.
Oh, right? But Lightning is.
But with Lightning, it is. But then there's other currencies, Dash, for example, that are designed to just do that.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it depends on the use case. The other thing that I find interesting about cryptocurrency is, so I grew up in the, you know, I don't know, I came up in 80s heavy metal, right? Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, Pantera, stuff like that. Once upon a time, there was just one category of heavy metal, right? It was just heavy metal, and that was it. And, like, bands that were not metal got thrown into the heavy metal category. Boston, Journey, right? Stuff like that. Arena Rock was tossed in from time to time into the metal category.
That's not only not metal, it's not heavy metal.
Yeah. Sometimes hard rock would get tossed in there too, like
Guns N' Roses,
Foreigner, or something. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, do they?
I don't know.
To me, they're rock.
Yeah.
But, like, my heavy metal barometer has always been Black Sabbath.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So if you're heavier than Sabbath, you're metal. If you're not heavier than Sabbath,
you're
rock.
Do you know
where
the term came from?
Heavy metal. Enlighten me.
Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix's music was described as carrying heavy chains of metal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I would not describe Jimi Hendrix as metal.
I thought rock. I thought where it would come from would be that, like, rock is, like, hard, you know, in comparison to what existed before.
Right.
But metal is even harder physically than rock.
Yeah. Right.
AC/DC, hard rock, right? Black Sabbath, heavy metal, right?
Right.
Like that was kind of like, you know, the barometers or whatever. Yeah. So the reason I talk about heavy metal in relation to cryptocurrency is that I see something similar happening in cryptocurrency that I have seen over the last 30 years or so.
That there's sound currency like gold and there's sounder currency?
Well, no, it's that there's subgenres now.
Ah.
Right? Now, we all know the word cryptocurrency, but within cryptocurrency now there's subgenres. There's privacy coin. There's spending coin. There's saving coin. There's
security coin.
Security coin.
Which is what Bitcoin is. It prioritizes security.
Stable coin, right? Mm-hmm. Things that are pegged to the dollar so you can move in and out of that value freely without actually converting it into actual dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right, staying within that sort of cryptocurrency realm. Mm-hmm. Right, so there's all these subgenres now, kind of like there is in heavy metal. In heavy metal now, there's like, oh my God, I don't even know, man, like 170,000 different subgenres, right? And it's kind of like the longer the name of the subgenre of heavy metal you're into, the bigger douchebag you are. It's kind of like the same thing with your coffee order at Starbucks. The longer your coffee order is, the bigger douchebag you are.
Right. Italian baby slaying murder death metal.
Right, yeah. Like, so,
because you have to have murder and death so people know exactly what you're talking about.
So, but this is what I see happening with cryptocurrency. Ironically, the other parallel that I can draw to cryptocurrency, I don't know if it's ironic or not, but is the search engine wars back in the late 90s, early aughts, when, you know, there were so many, everybody was competing to be the search engine du jour. There was Dice and Ask Jeeves and all these other.
I forgot about Ask Jeeves until recently.
Yeah. Mm. A dog pile was another one. But then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came this little search engine with just a plain page. Like all the other pages you'd go to search engines, they had a big thing where you could enter your search, but then the rest of it was advertisements, right? Mm. And stuff like that. But then Google comes along, and it's just a blank page with just in the middle of the place where you put your search and you go. And they won. They literally won the search engine wars, right? Because they had the cleanest interface. They had the best results, right? And they just literally dominated everything.
But I can't believe I don't get to feel lucky anymore. What if I'm feeling lucky?
Well, a nice hefty investment from InQtel goes a long way.
Mm.
InQtel, for those who don't know, is admittedly a CIA front for investing in legal businesses.
Right. The turning point for me for the company calling themselves Google now was when they eliminated their motto of don't be evil.
Yeah, I always tell
them. They didn't eliminate it. They just took it off the letterhead.
Yeah, that's eliminating it from the letterhead.
It's still their motto.
It's not.
It's just not what
they focus on. You can't go tour the Google HQ and find that anywhere, I'm told.
It's not hopeless, though. Use DuckDuckGo, use Brave, and, you know, don't use evil search engines like Google.
Use pre-search. That one's awesome. Pre-search, I found that one to be equally as effective as Google, which is saying something.
Oh, yeah.
Because that one's tricky for Brave.
DuckDuckGo, exactly.
Yeah, so pre-search, number one, I have found it to be equally effective.
Yeah.
Number two, it's also blockchain-powered.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And one of the things that's amazing to me is that the search engines are finally doing what we thought they were going to do in the first place because of the AI.
Be accurate?
Well, we thought that they would interpret human speech and then give us what we asked for. Now, that was never what they were capable of, but it's what we thought they were going to do when, like, Ask Jeeves would have I thought I would ask Jeeves. And then he would tell me the answer.
Jeeves would be like, oh, this is what you mean. Here, have the answer.
This technology is just useless until we can just type in, what's the name of that song that goes dum-da-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum? And it gives us the exact accurate result, all right?
That's the dum-dum song, don't you know?
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
You know, since we had, like, touched on the many flavors of cryptocurrency, you know, similar to the genres of metal, It seems to me that there are, like, major genres of it. So there's the token that focuses on decentralized computing. Now, the most well-known of that is Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, like, specific tokens that will focus on one aspect or another. Like, Render, for example, focuses on the processing power, which is why they're sort of linked to AI, because you need a lot of processing power to set up your AI. There's Filecoin, which is set up to the, like, filing part of it, similar to how library works.
Yep.
But yeah, all of those are in the genre of decentralized computing purposes. Now, there's the currency purpose, which is where you have Dash, Monero, Bitcoin Cash, things like that, things that you can very quickly and efficiently and for low prices send however much you need to send. And then there's storage, or like store of value. And there is just the absolutely dominant BTC in that genre.
Right.
But these are different purposes. So there's so BTC doesn't compete with anything else as a store of value. And there's a competition for the currency that is different from the competition for the store of value.
Right.
Well, and there's a reason why Bitcoin is the store of value, right? It's because it is the most secure network on the planet.
And, right.
And there is no second place.
It's the eldest of all the cryptocurrencies because it was first, and it has that first...
Advantage.
I guess that's what you want to call it, but
so that one's tricky.
But it is the longest tenured cryptocurrency network,
right,
in existence.
But so is Bitcoin Cash, and so is Dash, and so is Litecoin, because these are all forks from the original thing.
Yeah.
Like, they are all equally old. They are the same chain. It just went in different directions.
But I think that the attacks by governments, by hackers, by anyone with, you know, a profit motive and a thieving mind, right, have been largely launched against Bitcoin and not the others, including the forks.
Well, like,
yes, they've all experienced some sort of attack, but Bitcoin itself, the granddaddy Bitcoin BTC, has been attacked since I can remember, and is being attacked right now as we speak, and it is still secure. Bitcoin itself has never been hacked.
And this is why Bitcoin is the most anti-fragile cryptocurrency, is because what doesn't kill it quite literally makes it stronger.
Right.
And then I think that the really important thing about this is that if the government ever wises up and is like, oh shoot, cryptocurrency is coming to eat our lunch, I don't think they actually stand a chance against Bitcoin. I think that they do stand a chance against a lot of these weaker chains that, one, just have a smaller market cap, so a lot less computing power behind them. But two, even if the market cap purely transitioned over, there's just way too many security-related issues that come from chains that have big blocks that are, like, faster on the base layer, but create less of an incentive for somebody to get gigabytes and gigabytes of storage space to run a node.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hope we're not getting too in the weeds here. The point that I'm trying to make is that Bitcoin prioritizes security, which in a world of governments that have the unlimited ability to print fiat is the most important thing.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I guess that summarizes the point I was trying to make a little bit better than the way I made it. So thank you.
Anytime.
Yeah, one of the criticisms that the really hardcore BTC people will say is like, well, do you even need a blockchain for that? And there are a lot of things that you don't actually need a blockchain for that are being done.
Yeah.
But when it comes to currency, of course, you absolutely need a blockchain for it.
Yeah.
Now, I would also say that, like, next to that and possibly equal to that, I think that when we get to a decentralized court system, you will also equally need the kind of permanent secure record that you need for a store of value for that use purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, the other thing I guess we should probably touch on since we're talking about it is blockchain technology in and of itself is still largely uninvented or unexplored.
Yeah.
It's very young.
Cryptocurrency is sort of the first killer app from that particular invention. But, like, man, that thing can do so much more. They can do so much more. It can literally replace bureaucracies.
I mean, but what I love about cryptocurrency is that it used blockchain technology to solve our most important problem first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the coolest thing about it.
Yeah.
Is that most people don't realize how freaking important the money is, but this is why I think the technology was divinely inspired, is that it addressed this problem first. And I just think that that's so beautiful.
Yeah, and let's not forget about the why for those of you who are like, okay, I hear you talking about crypto and Bitcoin, but like, you know, I don't really. Well, why was cryptocurrency invented? Because of 2008, because of the banking collapse,
yeah.
Right? Because everybody lost their shorts, not everybody, but like a bunch of people.
Central banker power.
Well, right. And here's crucially important. What happened as the response is that you and me and everyone else on Earth, because it's a global reserve currency, bailed out the miscreants. All of these banks that had broken the law, that had taken enormous, unfathomable risks, that had defrauded everyone over and over, didn't fail, didn't end. Didn't restart. No one was punished. No, what happened?
I think like one guy went to prison, but that's like nothing.
Yeah. And if you look into that, he shouldn't have.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was like one of the people that shouldn't have ended up in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did happen? We all paid their bill.
Yep.
We paid for all of the money they lost.
We didn't just pay for it. We got raped for it.
Yeah.
Right? They took the money from us. We didn't voluntarily give it.
Right.
There was no vote. There was no GoFundMe for hey, everybody, if you really want to help these banks out because they're failing, you know, here's the website you go to donate some money if you want to help them, you know, sort of dig out of this mess. There was none of that. There was no voluntary portion. There was no permission. There was no, what's the word I'm looking for?
Consent.
Thank you.
Consent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd like to point out, we already saw a little sample of what happens when that event occurs in a post-Bitcoin world. We saw that almost precisely 1 year ago today with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature and all of that. And here's the crucial difference. Yes, all of the depositors were made whole, even though they probably shouldn't have, because that's a lot more money than was actually insured by FDIC.
Yeah.
But the stockholders were not made whole this time. The fact that you invested your money in something that you knew was doing terrible, terrible things, but you expected them to be bailed out with printed money, you lost.
Yeah.
That's the difference that it's made so far.
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning.
And if you just look at how the Fed has been doing policy in general, the fact that they have Jerome Powell spearheading all of this is because they are worried about the fact that they have some real competition now.
Yeah, the reason they moved from Janet Yellen, our current Treasury Secretary, print it all, give it to me, to private equity Powell, is because they needed to compete with something for the first time in the existence of this system.
Did you hear that recently she actually apologized for saying that inflation was transitory?
Really?
Yeah, this was like a week ago,
I saw something about that where, like, I mean, we never bought that here on Free Talk Live, at least this particular panel. Yeah.
Well, it's because the one thing that isn't transitory is Bitcoin going up over time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and we also know that economically speaking, if you look at the way the United States is handling the fiat currency that it peddles as the U.S. dollar, there's only one way for them to go, and that's more inflation.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go the other way. It's impossible. Right. They're not going to go the other way. They're not going to lower the interest rates. They're not going to back down on the. They're not going to start scooping up wads of cash and eliminating it from the marketplace. It's just not going to happen.
Well, that's what they're trying to do with increasing the interest rate, is they're trying to vacuum up all of the money that they injected into the economy.
Yeah.
But the problem is that, like, if you just talk to everyday people, nobody is really getting a mortgage right now.
Right.
Like, so it's not really having its intended effect because people are acting rationally.
Yes.
Surprise, surprise.
I was reading an email from an organization called Counter Markets, And it talks about how if you currently own property, consider yourself lucky. Because no one can afford a house right now, even a starter home. Like it was.
I know one group that can. Those who save in Bitcoin.
Yep.
Okay. But like outside of that, like it was just 2019 when the average salary per year to afford an average starter home was like $59,000 a year. Like, so if you were a single person or if you were a couple and you made more than $59,000 a year, then you could afford a starter home. Mm-hmm. That has now increased to something like $110,000 per year.
So Baruch Hashem, I got in at in 2021, or else I would not be in a home.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like, I was a single dude. I had one income, right? I made above that particular number at the time, so I was able to get a mortgage, et cetera, and so on. And so I did. If I'd have waited even like a year, I'd be stuck in an apartment, you know, or living the van life or something.
Yeah, for me, it could have even been 6 months because the interest rate just became so brutal. It went from being the best interest rate, lowest interest rate in American history to arguably one of the highest interest rates in American history. I mean, and that's not a coincidence.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Like, we were talking about Boeing and we're talking about land here, and both of these have the same problem because they are being used as a store of value.
Yep.
And when you do that, you screw everything up.
Yeah.
When you do that to housing, you end up with this massive homeless population problem.
Right.
You end up, of course, with a massive drug overdose problem, which has everything to do with the same thing, because this thing that we needed had its price pushed way higher than could possibly be afforded by the economy that produced it.
And then
with Boeing, all of these stocks are way overvalued to the point that there's not even a reasonable comparison to how much money these companies make over time and how much they're valued at. It is all pure speculation in the sense of it doesn't matter how much they make, it matters how much you can sell it for. And that's why you get these kind of miscreants at Boeing.
And Bitcoin fixes this, too, because if we have a store of value, that the whole point of it is basically to be a store value, something that has a fixed supply that we can rely on over time. Instead of putting that into a house, people will just live in houses.
Yeah.
And so there's no counter incentive to restrict building. And then instead of keeping a store of value in stocks as a, you know, to keep that store of value, they'll just invest in the company if they want to invest in a company.
Right. If they think the company is going to actually make the money, not just be sellable later.
Right.
And that's actually an important difference.
Exactly.
Because that puts the incentives for the company in providing value for its customers.
603-283-6160 is the number if you'd like to join us. Still to come tonight, a Zephon sermon.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk about the islands of New Honduras, Hampshire. It's Free Talk Live. Stay tuned.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hard-working people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
USA News Update. The governor of Ohio says people across the state came together in the aftermath of Friday's killer tornadoes. Republican Mike DeWine toured some of the damage on Friday in the north central part of the state. Three people died in one tornado.
Indian Lake community will come back. That's the message I got from everybody.
The suspect in last month's fatal beating of a Georgia nursing student is asking for a jury trial. 26-year-old Jose Ibarra is in custody for the death of 22-year-old Lakin Riley. Officials say Riley's body was found in a wooded area near the University of Georgia. A new study says more U.S. teens are experimenting with a psychoactive drug called Delta 8. At least one or two students in every average-sized high school class had tried the drug last year. Delta 8 is a chemical compound found in cannabis and hemp plants. Dave Collins, USA News.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Tonight's edition of Free Talk Live. We are a live call-in radio program where you can call in, talk about whatever's on your mind. We've been talking about all sorts of stuff. This whistleblower at Boeing found dead the day after the first day of his deposition. Nothing fishy about that at all. We've been talking about cryptocurrencies. We've been talking about government monopolies are a bad thing. We talk about Whitney Webb in Argentina, et cetera, and so on. So feel free to call in. We've got some calls on hold. We'll get to those momentarily. In the studio, it's myself, the captain.
Zeffin.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
I was going to ask you how to spell that, but you corrected yourself just fine.
It's spelled...
I think I need some more letters in my alphabet.
You just need to use the real alphabet, like Lulu.
Clearly. Before we go on, Free Talk Live, this half hour is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there's no ticket cost, and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial site forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. All right. Let's go to some of your calls and thoughts, as promised. Let's go to Laura. Laura, where are you calling from today?
South Carolina.
Hey, all right. Yeah, what's on your mind tonight? What do you want to talk about?
Just talking about the whistleblower event, I just wanted to remind the listeners that back when Boeing first started opening their manufacturing plant in North Charleston, there was a huge dispute as to whether they would be unionized or not.
Yeah.
And some of those tensions have not resolved even that quite a while. And I just wanted to throw that in for discussion.
Yeah, you're correct. So having lived in Seattle for 22 years before moving here in 2019, I recall all the hubbub and it was almost like Boeing had a competition to see, you know, where they're going to relocate some of their plants to. And it was indeed South Carolina that won out. And then I do recall, you know, there being at least something in the news about, you know, whether or not they would unionize, because Boeing, to my knowledge, had been completely unionized up until that point. But they wanted to relocate because, well, it was getting too expensive, even though Washington State was giving them plenty of tax incentives to stay there. They were getting a better deal from where they relocated to. So that's what I know on the topic.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is I'm a libertarian, right? So I believe that unions are just like a neutral thing. They're a voluntary association of people. But I don't think that if Boeing was unionized, this would have actually solved anything. It wouldn't have actually prevented this decrease in quality, this this horrible performance on their part. So I think it's interesting that they are able to successfully shut union attempts down. I think that shows that, again, their market share just makes them impossibly formidable.
They are a 500-pound gorilla.
No, yeah, for sure. But I don't know if this were a unionized company, if anything substantial would be different.
Douglas?
Well, I think that unions are a fantastic thing until the government gets involved.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been an effective way of fighting the fascism of America until they were incorporated into it. And, yeah, it's still very much in the interests of Boeing to make sure that there isn't a union that they have to pay well. And since they are so very well integrated with the most violent part of this mafia, they are happy to take out whoever will cut into their profits.
Laura, your thoughts?
Just listening to you guys. It's interesting.
Anything else you want to bring up tonight?
No, sir. That's it. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening, too. Feel free to call us again.
If I could just touch on one more thing about the union. So I just wanted to make an interesting observation that you see Joe Biden going around the country and doing stump speeches with unions of the steel industry and some of these other industries, but weird how he is absent at these union organizers rallying to get some support with Boeing. It's almost like he, for some reason, is a bit friendlier to the military-industrial complex industries than he is to other industries. I wonder why.
Well, he has always positioned himself to be in the good graces of everyone who is formidable. Tough guys, mm-hmm. miners, blue-collar workers, these are the people who he has gone out of his way to appeal to.
Mm-hmm.
Not by actually giving them things that they want, but by sounding really good to them. Mm-hmm. Because he knows what politics are like, and he knows that he's not in the VIP section of the club, so he wants to make sure that he has the most powerful force, like literally force, on his side at all times, which is why he will never say anything against the military-industrial complex. Mm.
Well, you could tell he's really spineless. Like, I always love reminding people that he did this because it's just so funny, but it also shows you a bit about his psyche. Like, when this one guy was criticizing him, and he's like, look, fat, look, like, let's do some push-ups right now. We'll see who has more of the stamina. Like, literally just calling this guy who's criticizing him fat. Like,
right, yeah.
And demeaning him, even though he's supposed to be working for him. You don't demean people you're working
when
for.
When your debate opponent decides to start insulting you, you've won.
Whether or not anybody else recognizes that is a whole other story. But, like, they're just out of stuff at that point. And so now they're resorting to insults.
And I want that anecdote to be a powerful, powerful anecdote for everyone listening, that some average guy just can slightly press the leader of the free world, and he just instantly caves in on himself.
The alleged.
And that was Joe Biden like 3-4 years ago. So that was like competent Joe Biden.
Yeah.
If you're just an average functioning human, you are more competent than the president of the United States. So be proud of that.
You can climb up stairs.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing that Trump managed to keep both the military-industrial complex and the soldiers that it is sacrificing on his side.
Mm.
So he pulls back some of the troops from Syria, not, you know, the whole thing like he should have, but enough to at least gain a name among the rank and file, while at the same time wildly expanding the drone bombing, for example, so that there are a lot more juicy government contracts for the military-industrial complex like Boeing.
Yeah, well, he also had a plan for a full pullout of Afghanistan, too.
Yeah.
Like, in a way that was not going to be disastrous like Joe Biden. I mean, it's the government. He probably would have found a way to make it mildly disastrous. But it wouldn't be like the absolute S show that...
And I guarantee you he would have gotten the same amount of criticism from the media.
Oh, for sure.
Because they absolutely will not let you reduce the amount of wars without taking flack.
Right. Well, that was the interesting thing about Biden is, like, I think that when he did the pullout, they weren't silent about it. Like, they covered it. But they weren't, like, criticizing him in either direction.
It was literally the first time that I remember hearing any criticism about Joe Biden on the mainstream media.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Like, I remember them just basically covering the people, like, running to the plane and all of that, which I guess is kind of inherently negative coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember it being like, oh, Joe Biden did this disastrously. Like, I don't remember them saying that out loud.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, you should have seen what was on Fox News.
Oh, well, I mean, of course, but they do that, like, well, regardless.
They actually hadn't attacked Biden, which was weird, but they had really avoided attacking Biden up until that point.
Oh.
At least that was my memory, at any rate.
So let's go to more of your calls and thoughts. I believe this is Olivia calling. Olivia, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hello, it's been a minute.
It has. I'm glad to hear from you, of course.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. I took a sabbatical. I haven't checked on Free Talk Live in a while, and I thought Ian went to jail or prison. I was going to see if there's a way to write to him or send him a magazine or something.
Yeah, there is. We expect him to be moved from where he's at. He currently is in Merrimack, which is a New Hampshire facility. It's not a federal prison. So we expect him to be moved to a federal facility, sometime soon. Usually that happens after all of the, you know, the conviction and then the, not his appeal, but he went through a restitution thing where they, you know, raped him for some money or whatever. But, like, that has all concluded now. So we expect the move to happen.
Well, and we keep all the up-to-date information on thecrypto6.com. So if you want to know how to send him a letter or a magazine, I've sent him some letters in the past. I need to be better at doing it more regularly. But we have some good people that make sure that that website is always up-to-date if there is any sort of change.
I also, just because I knew you were going to ask that, Olivia, I've just posted to all the Free Talk Live social media. There's an article written over at freekeen.com called Writing to Caged Activist Ian Freeman at the Merrimack County Spiritual Retreat. I just posted a link to that, so if you can find our Twitter feed or our Mastodon feed, or I think it's even on Facebook now, you should be able to find all that information there. You still have to write him at Merrimack County for now, and then once he gets moved to a federal facility, we'll find out which one, you know, all the necessary information, and we'll publish that as well, okay?
Okay, good to know. Yeah, can you get paper mail still in New Hampshire? I know they did away with it in a lot of states and the feds.
Yes,
well, that's how I wrote to them.
Yes, and in fact, if you're going to write, you know, if you don't have a printer, handwriting is okay. Use only blue or black ink. No red ink, no green ink, any other color, they won't approve. Don't decorate the envelope. Like Bonnie found out, she got a letter rejected because she put a couple hearts on the back of the envelope.
Oh, my God.
And they sent it back. We're like, nope, sorry. So, like, keep the envelope
dangerous
plain.
Hearts.
You know, keep the letter to, like, actual words. You can send things like, if you want to print out a meme from the internet you think is funny, you can do that, but fold it up, you know, and put it in the envelope along with that. But don't use things like crayons to decorate any of it, or magic markers, highlighters, stuff like that. They frown upon that because, you know, over the course of time, people have figured out ways to smuggle things into prison. And so they look out for that kind of stuff, and they just say no to everything except that stuff.
Right, right. Well, I hope he's keeping his head up in there. That's rough. I was just gonna also, you've brought up so many different things tonight, which is, it does feel like this country is just one fires everywhere to put out, and I honestly don't know. I don't know how it's gonna be put to rights. I don't think it can be put to rights.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well,
I always wondered, like, how did we get from things that used to be, like, really quality and people were proud to be American and life was affordable to this? And I learned today that stock buybacks by companies were illegal until the 1980s. And I think that might have part of it, be a small part of it. And then I was reading this old book from 1958. I got it at a flea market. It's called The Insolent Chariot by John Keats. It's about Detroit and the car industry, but it's a satire. It's really funny. But in chapter 6, he talks about the corrupt practices of all the car companies up in Detroit and how they inflated the prices over and over and over again. And it was just a really, really interesting breakdown of how these scams that companies come up with and pass those costs on to the consumer. They always say, oh, we can't pay our workers more, but they find a way to bring every nickel and dime out of every process. I'll give just one example, actually two examples. So you couldn't have a dealership. A dealership was basically a franchise, and you had to follow all the rules and regulations that the motor companies would set for you. So they would demand that you stock goods that the dealer may know they can't sell for their area. People aren't interested in slip covers or other add-ons, but they would still be mandated to stock those, and so they would just up the price, and then people would not buy the slip covers, but the cost of having to carry those was built into the car because the dealer didn't want to take a loss.
Right.
Or they would have to buy, every year they'd have to buy a huge set of tools, even if they didn't need them. Another thing was they were charging freight for a whole car, even if it was sent in pieces and assembled at the dealership. So it cost less to send parts than the whole car, but they would still charge the entire freight cost. So it was all kinds of different ways that they would nickel and dime the customer. And the price of the car should have actually been much cheaper, but this way they could write off their profits. They would also find ways to cook their own books, and dealers would testify that the way they were ordered to keep their accounting books was completely inaccurate and fraudulent, and they were losing tax write-offs in that as well, but the company would profit. It's just really wild. And this is a book from the 50s,
yeah.
The late 50s.
And I know people who have been employed or even currently employed by the automotive industry, specifically dealerships. And there's a nickname that they have, Stealerships. That goes back longer than anyone can remember.
You go find
the oldest person working in the automotive industry at a dealership, and you go, hey, do you remember the first time you heard Stealership? They'll go, oh, I think my daddy taught me that one, or whatever, right? It goes back so far that no one can remember when it started.
So to answer the question of, like, what really screwed this all up, I mean, ultimately, it comes down, in my mind, to two things. Number one, around the turn of the century, we changed the definition of a corporation so that it used to be something that was temporary and had to be for the public good. Now you could have a for-profit corporation that only needs to make profits and the institution of the fiat currency system. I mean, once you've got those in place, then you have captured industries like the car companies, where you have an immensely high barrier to entry, and they're supposed to be regulated by government instead of by the market. And that's the thing. All of these little tricks, they apply when you're being regulated by someone who's being paid in stolen money to kind of look at it,
yeah.
Instead of being regulated by, if I screw this up, my competition will knock me out of business.
Well, and Olivia, I just wanted to say that while we have been talking about a lot of topics that sound pessimistic, if you listen to the tone and the tenor and the substance of our show, we're actually all really optimistic, and we believe that there's actually a really bright future ahead of us, and that's because we've been blessed with a technology that solves the fiat problem. Like, we have technology and we have sound money that will make it so that the government can't just print things willy-nilly, mm-hmm. which had, like, if you dig into any single issue, it all goes back to the money printer. Male loneliness, money printer. Pollution, money printer. Mm-hmm. Poverty, money printer. War, money printer. Everything goes back to the central bankers, and the fact that we have technology like Bitcoin, like cryptocurrency, that makes it so that we can have a finite store of value and a finite means of exchange that can't be manipulated by any single person and can be accessed by anybody on Earth. It just solves so many of these problems. Like, yeah, we're still going to have problems, but, like, the future is bright.
Yeah, all of these fires are by design, and the solution to all of them is the same, and it's, number one, get a community together.
Yeah.
Like, number two, innovate around them. Like, yeah, you're right. We can't rely on corporations. So do things like decentralized autonomous organizations that are nothing like corporations. We can't rely on the money, so make your own money. We can't rely on the legal system, so find your own way of solving disputes peacefully as a community. Like, all of these are solvable problems, but most importantly, there are people getting elected because these problems exist.
Mm-hmm. Olivia?
I have two comments on that. I think another huge problem is that drug patents, if drugs are developed with public donations, like all this breast cancer, raise money for breast cancer, raise money for heart health, if these drugs are funded with public donations or worse, public funds, like there are government grants and government subsidies, then these should be in the public domain. You cannot, if you get your drug, which was developed in a university, which is funded by the government, if you buy that patent from a university, you should not be able to profit off that. That was paid for by the people. That is so double dipping. It makes me sick that they're profiting off of people's misery, suffering, health. Like, yeah. It's they're vultures. They're worse than vultures.
Yeah. Another money printer problem.
Yeah.
Well, the second thing I wanted to say was I recently did my taxes. Don't boo me, but I get a refund, okay? And so they garnish my wages. I'm getting my own money back. But they ask on TurboTax, and I know this is, if you go to an accountant, it's the same thing. Did you buy, sell, give away, transfer, use cryptocurrency? How would they know? Like, if it's do you?
How would they know, indeed?
Yeah, how do question. They know if you have it? Like, is your name on it? Is it tied to your social security number?
They just added that because what they're counting on is you to answer it for them.
Yeah, there's no way they would know. Unless you made it obvious.
Like, I mean,
unless you're like, hey, guys, this is my string of, like, letters and numbers that create my address. It is, like, B348625. Like, That's how they know.
Now, there are examples of people, like, there are folks who do, you know, I don't know, like the YouTube channel or whatever, who are trying to teach people about cryptocurrency, who will show off, right, and be like, here is my hardware wallet, and right, here is how much I have in this exchange, right, and here's how I go about doing trading. So they will show off some amount of cryptocurrency in order to, you know, make their living or, you know, get their point across, teach the thing that they're trying to teach. But outside of that, you know, this isn't legal advice or tax advice, but I would just not fill that out.
Well, like, for example, I guess they might be able to track certain purchases. I was looking at buying, like, a house or land in Fiji, and there are quite a few people, at least that I've seen, they're from Australia. They'll buy, like, a retirement home in Fiji and then decide they don't actually want to retire there, and they will sell for crypto. It's kind of interesting, but if mm-hmm. you buy a house or part of an island with crypto, I mean, the government's probably going to notice.
So that's actually an interest. That's an interesting thing. Again, this isn't tax or legal advice, but there's actually what a lot of people call a loophole. I think that it's just there because it's infeasible for them to enforce it, where if you buy a foreign piece of property, you don't actually have to report it as long as it's not an income-generating property. So, like, if it's just, like, a vacation house that you have, it's not like you have to tell the federal government, hey, I have a vacation house in Fiji or El Salvador or whatever. But if you, like, have a tenant there, you know, you just have to say, oh, I get this amount of tax money from that tenant.
From rent or whatever.
Yeah, from rent, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and it's
really interesting.
Yeah, and they don't care if you spend crypto or not to do it. Like, yeah, you know, that's not something that they care about.
Yeah, it's worth going over again the difference between anonymous and pseudonymous. So if you use most cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Dash, things like that, so the trick is, can they connect this wallet to this person?
Right.
Now, if you've done something that connects this wallet to this person, like, okay, I bought this on this exchange and
Coinbase.
I sent it to this wallet,
okay,
then, like, your anonymity is gone because that pseudonymous level disappears as soon as they can connect it to that wallet. However, if you use something like Monero, then it is anonymous. So there's really no way to tell who sent what, where, when.
Somebody would have to show me how to do all this and all these things because I've tried to learn on my own and it's confusing. I'm just saying, I don't know, maybe I can find a friend of a friend, but it's confusing. Like, who? Like,
I'll come up to New Hampshire, right? Any of us will teach you for free.
Yeah, or find one of these freedom cells, Olivia. They might be able to point you to a teacher or something along those lines. And thank you, of course, for the call. Feel free to call us again. 603-283-6160. Still to come, Zethan's sermon and the New Hampshire Duras something or another. Stay tuned. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
We all have heard about the benefits of fish oils, but what about the presence of heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, furans, and other contaminants found in fatty tissues of fish? GCNteam.com recognizes this risk and offers IFOS certified tested omega-3 fatty acids. EPA, DHA insist on IFOS omega-3 fatty acid certification. Get the best at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203.
anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.